The Supreme Court actually, since I wrote this slide, I wrote this PowerPoint for us to use. But since we actually about 4 days ago got a note from the court that they're on May 4th, I believe it's a Tuesday, they are going to hold a public hearing from 9 to 12 that morning in case anybody has any final comments, and then we'll consider adopting these rules. In my way of thinking, that's sort of fast track. We were literally thought, well, you know, they'll probably do it sometime in June. The fact that the Supreme Court says, dudes, we want to do this sooner, means to me they're high on this and they really want to get this done. So they'll vote on approving these rule changes. And remember, only 5 of the 9 justices have to vote on each, and they can vote on each of one of these propositions individually if they want. And then, of course, they will determine when the effective date would be, July 1st, September 1st, you know, what's typical. There's not a whole lot of reason that they need any preparation. These are great additions to your lawyer toolkit. I stand by that absolutely and positively. When we came out with the February issue of the Texas Bar Journal, as we call it now, the TBJ, for whatever reason, I noticed there were some comments in there, which will go on. And I was like, oh, I wish they'd allow me to respond to that comment. I had a whole little sub article in there, but the comments were wrong. It showed that the person, in my opinion, didn't even really read what this rule was. By the way, they don't get to pocket veto this. If the Supreme Court doesn't vote within 120 days, yoo-hoo, they're depressed. So how do the rules work? It's anticipated. Remember, I learned so much about drafting these rules, drafting legislation. In a rule, you don't explain the rule. You say you won't wear red hats on Wednesday. You don't say that's because we don't like red and Wednesdays are this. You explain those sorts of things in the comments. So we're in the process of drafting comments for the court that'll help explain what these rules mean, because you don't explain it within the rule itself. And of course, they're promulgated by the Supreme Court. They don't require you to approve of them. That's great, because we can draft these and help the court because we know what these are intended to mean, what they're intended to address. And so we'll have a hand in drafting those. It's also likely that your practice sessions, like the sections of the bar, like on this first rule dealing with probate stuff, they're going to assist lawyers with guidance via forms. There'll be CLE. I'm already drafting some language that we can add to our attorney-client agreements to help explain some of this stuff. All right, let's go ahead. This ballot item may pass with 89.74%. What this does, again, it deletes a current rule 102G, and it deals directly with trying to help your client. And it'll typically be used in a situation, not with a new client that comes in the door for the first time, you lay eyes on, I'll call it a him, and you think, I don't think he understands what's going. That's a different situation. This rule is meant to address what more and more lawyers are seeing, that they have a client with 20 years, they know Bob, I'll call him, well. Bob is a wonderful rancher in North Texas, and they know him well. And all of a sudden, he comes in for a meeting, and you don't think he's all there. And you say, Bob says, I just watched the National Geographic. I want to sell my ranch because I'm going to buy a submarine. And you're going, Bob, you don't even swim. Why would you want? So you're a little worried. Now, or a client comes in, and this actually came from the probate bar. They wanted this flexibility. So if your client, now, before this rule is adopted, what happens? If a client comes in and you don't think they're understanding, there's nothing you can do. You can't violate confidentiality. You have to say, I think your dad needs guardianship. I can't tell you why, because I don't think it's done. But anyway, now you're at least entitled to reach out to their daughter, their spouse, their, you know, close friend, their brother, say, you know, I had a conversation with Bob, and I'm really not convinced that he understood the impact of some decisions that we'll be making. Can you tell me, has he seen a doctor? Is his medications changed? In other words, if Bob comes in and says, my daughter's been mean to me, she didn't help me fix a tire, I'm cutting her out of my will, you don't call the daughter and say, your dad's about to cut you out of the will. No. It's a very, very limited crack in that door to say, I'm worried that Bob's not understanding anymore. Can you tell me what's going on medically with him? Is there something? And that way you put the family on notice that there might be an in. Now, you're not doing that for yourself. You're doing that because you're worried about Bob's decision. The other thing, see the last two words at the bottom of that slide? This is permissive. If you don't reach out, you can't get in trouble with the grievance committee. This is to help you help Bob, not like, okay, now I have to decide if I have to crack the, what I, no, completely. Isn't that a great tool? All right. So now let's go on to item B. This is easy. 93.34% approved. And again, I can't imagine that the 6.6%, what they're thinking of, other than I hate the state bar, I'm voting against everything. All it does is add a specific saying that if you can, again, crack the door of confidentiality to get an ethics opinion from an ethics expert. Now, I do that all the time.